This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Hi, Jason Gipps, Joy Production Manager. It's Radiothon time. We still need Joy and we need your support. If you appreciate our free podcast service, our voice for the LGBTI community globally, and the volunteers that make our service possible, please sign up, renew your Joy membership, or make a tax-deductible donation before June 30 to keep our service possible. You may win a prize. Head to joy.org.au and click on either the Become a Member or Donate tabs to support us. If you appreciate our podcast service, let us know in the comments section when making your donation. Joy Podcasts, where you want them, when you want them, at joy.org.au and on iTunes.
That was Aretha Franklin with Call Me.
I would have never guessed. You know that voice, don't you? Oh, my God.
Yeah. It was just a song. So
now, Aretha is a bit of a diva, and funnily enough, we've got our own favourite diva in the studio right now.
That was beautiful.
Well, I was talking about David. But Marie Coote, I think you've probably been on our show the most out of anyone, mainly because you just are such a busy lady.
Am I wearing out my welcome?
No.
So, and we're going to get to that.
Yes.
We're going to get to your new stuff.
You have a wonderful store gallery called Melbourne Style in Clarendon Street in South Melbourne. But you are forging ahead so much with being a book publisher, but it's your own stuff that you're publishing.
Well, I'd be terrified to publish somebody else's in case I messed it up or didn't hit the mark.
But you're getting lots of practice and you're also winning awards.
Yes.
And congratulations, because it's only been a few months since you've been back from where?
Bologna.
Bologna.
Beautiful Bologna.
Mm-hmm. And what book was that?
That was Spellbound, Making Pictures with the ABC, which is a typographic illustration book, and it's all the pictures are made from the letters that spell the image, and it won the special mention in the Bologna Ragazzi Fiere, which is the international peak children's book fair. And so I'm thrilled. It's the first time an Aussie's won in 10 years.
Oh, wow. Congratulations.
I'm thrilled.
But then again, the wonderful thing is that you're a great photographer, but you're also
I just hit and miss photographer, but I know what I can see. Technically, it's from the hip, I promise you. Yep. But,
But, and what, we'll just go back to that, because your first book was what?
The Melbourne book, History of Now, which is an adult history and collection of stories and anecdotes of yesterday and today, contemporary culture and history of Melbourne.
And a lot of those photos in that book taken.
Nearly all of them. Some are historic.
And how many editions have you done of that one?
Four, doing the fifth right now.
Oh, are you? Mm-hmm. Right. Okay, so you keep on updating it. And
they keep changing the city without asking me, David.
How dare they?
I know. They pull down a building without asking me. I don't get a phone call. I go, oh, my God, something's missing. I've got to change that chapter.
How many books has it been since then?
Well, I think in total there's about 17.
Wow. Wow. That's enormous. Mm. Now, this new one is on architecture.
Yes.
And you have a love of architecture, both here in Melbourne and this book, which we'll get to a little bit. Give us a hint of what you like about Melbourne's architecture.
I don't have to hint. It's just two words, Manchester Unity.
Right.
It's just the best building ever. I love it. For me, it's our Chrysler building because I just love deco. And for it to be smack bang in the centre of the grid, and I just adore it. And it's the story of it is great. It was built in 13 weeks, I think, during the Depression. The boardroom table was craned straight into the floor that it's on, I think the 11th floor, craned straight in, and the huge sheet of glass that covers the boardroom table was craned in as well. It was a floor a week. Because it's 13 levels, I think.
They
built a floor a week in the Depression.
Yep.
The boardroom, as I just said, has got tailor-made furnishings in it. You've probably been in there. It's just exquisite, the wall panelling and the carpet and everything. But the detail in the Manchester Unity blows me away. The plasterwork, the friezes, the doorknobs, the parquetry in the lift, the stained glass.
And isn't it wonderful that it's it's been treasured by the owner and the owner is sort of updating and opening it up. You can now go on tours of it as well.
Oh, we're super lucky that he has decided to restore it the way that he has and put the money back into it. Super lucky.
Yep. And but what I'm getting at there as well is that Art Deco, which that's a beautiful example of, but this city is full of the most wonderful Art Deco buildings. An architect friend of mine said that Melbourne is one of the, I think it's in the top 20 of cities still to this day, with so many Art Deco buildings.
Yeah, we lost one recently near Myer. They're just one in Lonsdale House, I think it was called. Just down it came to Widener Lane, which is shocking.
Yeah.
And I tell you, I've just come back, as you say, from Bologna. You're not allowed to touch the buildings like that over there. No. Things don't fit down a lane, they don't fit. But they've got a terrific underground system for rubbish over there, which, I'm sorry to digress, but it's just brilliant. You know, things will go down under and get munched up. It's terrific.
Oh,
because
it's
an ancient sort of, you can't mess with that sort of.
True.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, some of the, well, Bourke Street in particular, there's some beautiful Art Deco, including this building we're in here at Joy.
And there's the Century Building down on Swanston Street, which I also love, which is kind of at the other end of the Manchester Unity block with the little dome tower on top. And the tiles that are so deco. And we have Napier Waller's beautiful mosaic halfway down Collins opposite the straight on Collins, you know, the beautiful mosaic of the figures on Newspaper House.
Yep, and he's also got one in the foyer of the TNG building.
TNG.
Which they're two of my favourite things to show people.
My God, what an asset, what a diamond, what a historic great that man was. And there's a beautiful stained glass of his hanging in the Potter Museum up at the top
That's
of
right.
Swanston.
Yep, up the stairwell when you're walking up the stairwell.
Yep.
And then there's the Meyer Building, which is a beautiful Art Deco building.
And he's got his murals upstairs in the mural hall too.
Which is a treat.
Yeah.
And and so many people have got wonderful stories of their youth going up there for special events. And Globe, which is an organisation within our community, their awards night is held there at present. But I think they're moving to a bigger venue. They need it. It's such a treat to go there.
Yes, to see
that, you forget each year and you just walk in and go,
don't you think that, those days architecture gave so much, like as embellishment out of kind of extra specialness gave back to the streetscape or gave to the interior in some way with extra artwork, extra columns, extra fabulous chandeliers, extra. And now it's sort of kind of, whatever you can get away with. If the lights turn on, that's great, and then we'll move on.
Did you think it was something, a very deliberate thing back in those days of giving back to the community?
I think in the 20s, everybody really knew how to live and they knew how to dance, how to dress,
design was king, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, design was king. And enjoyment of that design, whether it was enjoyment of the music, of the fashion, of the room that you're in, of the space, of the outdoors, seemed to understand this real soaking up of all of those details and really, reveling in the gorgeousness of all of it.
Yep. And of course, one of the other great Art Deco cities is New York, of course.
Yes.
And which that's the treat of going to New York is to look out at some of those buildings from buildings.
Melbourne's great artist, Marco Lucio, whose etchings are on the front of my other book, The Art of Being Melbourne. He's in New York right now and he's just managed to talk somebody to take him up to the top of the Chrysler Building.
Oh, wow.
He's just posted an image of that. The gargoyle the eagle gargoyles or stainless steel are all around the top of the Chrysler, and he's between you and me, far away from it.
Oh, wow.
And he's shot it, and he's doing more work on it.
Because there's a great photo from the of 40s or 50s, I think, of one of those with a beautifully dressed woman, you know, like in the foreground of it. That I love one of those shots.
But it's so hard to get up there now. You know, everything's so that it's really hard when you want to shoot or draw a sketch. You know, the hurdles you've got to go through to get to these places. Yep. So,
and as you were saying earlier, is that you know, like it wasn't just the outside architecture; it was what's happening inside and the furniture,
the lift buttons in the Chrysler Building. You know, again, the parquetry, the wall paneling, mosaic floors, the whole every detail.
One of my favourite architects is Frank Lloyd Wright. I've got many coffee table books on him, and they keep on coming. And because he designed all the furniture for a lot of the homes as well.
Which brings me to Robin Boyd, who did exactly the same thing. And he
nice little segue.
Yeah, sorry about that. But our own Robin Boyd, who's a master of interiors and so on, he had the same holistic kind of approach to his architecture. So
tell us a bit about him.
Well, I don't know as much as I should, but he specialised really, I suppose you could say, in domestic architecture. So it's not so much just skyscrapers and your big commercial buildings, although there were some apartment and commercial buildings, but for the most part, he's known for his domestics, and he just does beautiful homes. So, and I mean, the Walsh Street home here, where we launched this book, Robin Boyd Architect, is kind of not child friendly because it's fabulous. So, there's no balustrade and no balcony railing and stuff like that. It's beautiful, and the stairs, the bathroom, my God, and the tiles in the bathroom, a tiny black mosaic tile with just a brush stroke of gold on each one, and it's a sort of almost a double ceiling height wall in the bathroom. And it's exquisite. Everyone should go along, and they have open days at the Walsh Street House. So you go to robinboydfoundation.org and have a look, and you'll be able to see what's on there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, like, your last book, your children's book, was called?
Andy Webb Artist.
Right. And that was a spider.
A spider who lives in the National Gallery and dreams of being a famous artist one day.
And he kept on.
He wanders through the art gallery at night, tracing all the greats, you know, Van Gogh, Michelangelo, Warhol, and tracing them with his spider web to learn what art's all about until he finds his own style. And he does his own exhibition at the end in cobweb.
That's so brilliant. So,
yeah. So, and this one is again for kids.
Yep.
And it's called Robin Boyd Architect, except I've switched the letters. So it's Robyn Boyd, as in little Tweety Boyd. And she's a little bird, and she builds nests in all kinds of architectural shapes and sizes because she lives at the National University, and her nest's on the ledge outside the architecture school. And she listens every day about architecture and wants dreams of being an architect.
She's a very busy lady.
Where did the idea come from to, you know, like, use your imagination to, you know, like, look at architecture through a bird's eye.
A bird's eye view, if you will.
Very good. Isn't he good? I wanted to do the art book, and that sort of happened first, and then I thought I'd like to do architecture as well, and what animal builds things. I don't know, you know, beavers and other things build, but birds are the first one that sort of I warmed to. And I did a school thing last year with a group, and they were using one of my books, When You Go to Melbourne. And
love that book.
And it was such an eye-opener for me, because they'd been using it as curriculum, and the kids had done all these projects on the book around the city of Melbourne, as well as around, this is Port Melbourne School, so they also did little books called When You Go to Port Melbourne, and went out and read it, looking for local landmarks and interesting things and history and facts and stuff from their own suburb. And I realised that the teachers really need books that have got a curriculum kind of built in if they can get it. And of course the book should be fun and inspiring and about dreams and not giving up and funny little character that has a go and chances their arm at things. But if there's underneath it, if there's another level of a class that you can say, okay, let's look at architecture, or let's look at art or whatever and see how this works and what the basic tenets of it are, that's great. For second grade, you know, you've got sort of 7-year-olds, whatever, and it's an entree into that level of thinking that, you know, if I can help the teachers do that, that's great.
Does it give you a bit of a structure as a creator to, you know, create something a little bit more structured, I guess might be the right word.
Yeah, because you've got to lay the basics down so they can sort of understand this is what it's about and these are the different ways of approaching it, and then these are the fundamental sort of tenets that have belong to that discipline because people have tried certain things and they've worked a few things out, you know. I mean, underneath this one, there's the concept of form following function, because although this little bird is exploring building domes and building towers and spires and all that sort of stuff, it's not really right for her egg. Where's the egg fit in, you know?
Right.
So it's purpose. It's about purpose. And so all serious architects will understand that form should follow function, et cetera. It's not just about building a folly or a mad.
Which sometimes architectures lose
sort
sight
of. Let's, absolutely.
I've seen it happen many times where, might be an interesting building and within four or five years, especially if it's an office
it doesn't
building,
work.
It's
yeah.
not working.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you're like, and they've got to then re-spend money on,
that's right.
on making it sort of work.
Well, because you can doesn't mean you should, but that's the same in many disciplines. People get carried away with what's possible instead of what you actually need for the purpose. And the best design, Frank Lloyd Wright, et cetera, they get that whole form follow function thing, but they also are brilliant designers, very economical sometimes with their design and just so clever.
Yep.
So,
And often are persecuted, like a lot of true artists are, with society saying, no, you can't do this. You're like, what are
like
you
Jan
doing?
Like Jørn Utzon and the Opera House.
Yeah, yes. A classic example, which is one of the little bird has made in the book. Now, what we've got to explain to our listeners is that all the buildings that you've used in this book are all like twigs.
That's right.
Now, they're twigs.
There's a performance artist whose name I'm just so sorry, but I've blanked on it. And if you go to stickwork.org, I think, you'll see his work. He did an installation down at Fed Square a couple of years ago of this mad little twig cubby house thing.
Mm-hmm. I remember it.
And it's beautiful stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's real life twig things. So I've been lucky I don't actually have to build it. I can draw it. So I've done, you know, the spires and towers and church towers and all that sort of stuff, but also the, you know, the Chrysler building and...
Tell us some of the buildings that you have actually recreated that your
little bird
has built out of little sticks.
Well, classic dome shapes from the Renaissance, of course, and spires and so on and castles, but we begin looking at basic geometry, which is circles and triangles and rectangles and pyramids and domes and so on, so that those basic geometric shapes can be talked about in class two with kids, but and other basic archways and features of keystones and stuff like that. But the Robin tries her hand at an opera house and a Chinese temple and all kinds of shapes, pavilions and Chrysler Building and the Sydney Tower and the Eiffel Tower
and the Eiffel Tower.
Eureka,
which is great.
Yeah.
But what I love about it, when you look closely enough, and I haven't read the text, but there's an egg sitting in some very odd places.
She's popped her egg here and
just
there.
Just to see, is this a proper bird's nest? Of course, it's not because it's an architectural building.
Yep.
But some of them are worse. On the Eiffel Tower, it fits in beautifully.
The Eiffel Tower sits in there. It's a bit breezy up there, though.
Yeah, it would be a bit breezy. You must have had a lot of fun working out what architectural gems you wanted to use in this book.
Yes, and to represent the basic shapes and so on. So this is the interior of a famous library. So it has this wonderful spiral form. And Zaha Hadid's amazing organic shapes. This is a museum that hangs off the side of a cliff, and it's just the most amazing structure. So there's a lot of incredible work to look at. I'm very bored by just ordinary towers. They leave me pretty much cold, square cubes that rise to the sky. I like organic shapes, rounded shapes as well. I like Zaha Hadid's work, as she's just terrific. And in the end, Robin discovers the best shape is egg-shaped. And so there's a whole new then creative bent that she takes off on. And the interiors there are quite, I suppose, simpatico with the Boyd ethos, that it should be about living spaces, interior spaces that are full of sunshine and dappled light, sunshade and breezes and comfort and funky furniture.
Amazing. Your mind just blows me away. We'll be back soon talking more about this gorgeous little bird's adventure about building wonderful buildings out of sticks. You're on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9.
You're on Joy 94.9, Sunday Arts Magazine, and we're talking to our friend and prolific worker, Marie
When
Coot.
Does she sleep?
I don't think she does, David.
No, not much.
She's probably got a little nest at home, you know, where she just has a five-minute kip.
I'm working
and
on
then back
sleep.
Into it.
Now, this is your second book really aimed for... Well, no, it's not, because Spellbound was a kid's book as well.
And When You Go to Melbourne is a kid's book.
Yeah. Mm. But in a row, you've had two in a row. You know, like, how is it, you know, like, working with teachers and all that, you know, like, surely you know, like, this is an opportunity. I know there's a lot of teachers out there that listen to this show. Are you happy for them to contact you for you to get the kids to come into your gallery or
Absolutely.
You to go to the school?
Yeah, I'd love to. And in these two books, I've created teacher's notes for both of these books, which in the back you'll see there's a basic teacher's glossary and information and some activities to do, but there's more online and the web address is just there and they're free. People just email me and say, can you send me the teacher's notes for Andy Webb or for Robin Boyd? And I just send them to them. So yeah, it's, this is all the stuff that I learned at school and I don't know that they get the chance to get into this much now. I remember learning about keystones and archways and flying buttresses. I don't know where it came into my life, but it's all coming out again now. And when I walk around Bologna, there's a flying buttress right there, and there's a barrel vault in the, you know, you look at the architectural features, you know what they are.
I don't think a lot of people would know that now.
No, even my generation, you know,
you didn't
schooling
get
in the 90s, we did not get any of them.
Well, I'm 1,000 years old, so, you know. it was great.
Yeah.
And it's just, I don't know, percolating back out again. So I try to distill it into something that's simple. And the teacher's notes help that occur. You can do little activities in class, building certain shapes and learning about geometry and stuff. Walk around your local suburb, look at interesting architecture, ask yourself why you like it. Ask yourself why football stadiums around. I mean, simple questions. Yep. Why isn't there a roof on there? All sorts of stuff that it's about noticing too. You know, Brendan, with the type book and the photographic alphabet book, I did that because there's so much to notice when you look around Melbourne. Great shapes in the architecture, interesting buildings. And I just fear people losing that art of noticing.
Yep.
What I love as well is creating of dialogue about these things. It's, you know, the first thing is to notice them or notice them again if you've forgotten them, but then to talk to people about it and to actually get that dialogue happening and conversation started, because I think maybe, you know, I could be wrong here, but I think that's where architecture, you know, gets forgotten, is because people just stop talking about it in that way.
Yeah, it should be remarkable. I mean, remarking means you remark on it. On something remarkable, and architecture should be remarkable.
But do you know what? My biggest problem is that parents are so busy now with their kids, and I've got a nephew with four kids that I help babysit a lot. It's me sort of hinting to them about different things, and you know, like, and they're hungry to know. So that's why it's up to the uncles and aunties and grandparents to help the parents in educating the kids, not shove it down their throat.
No,
but
you just need to find a way to turn them onto something.
Yeah, but
if you can turn a kid on, if you see 100 kids and, you know, two of them, you know, the light goes on, that's great.
Yep.
That's just great.
Yep. And books like these, you know, like, is an easy way to do it because they've all got a birthday or Christmas or whatever. And you know, like, instead of giving all this plastic crap that just breaks in 5 minutes, a book like this, and I know how often I'm reading the same book over and over, to the,
your
kids.
Children's picture books, David.
Oh, gosh. You know, like, it's just
there.
Crazy. Actually, there's a really cute one about a witch getting a computer and putting all her spells and her wand on the computer, but then realizes that when there's a blackout, she can't use it to help her. That's really funny. So, yeah, like, it's great little stories like that.
Yeah.
And a story like this about a beautiful bird making beautiful buildings. And that adults, when we're reading something to a kid, some of them is really boring, but this is information for us as well, stuff that we would have forgotten about or that we didn't know. It's nice for us to be reminded, isn't it?
Yeah, that's terrific. I'm glad you said that. That's great. But that's the aim, you know.
Yeah.
And as I said, if you can pack a little bit extra information into a book, it's still got to be fun. It's still got to be about the little character and the journey. But yeah, if it comes with those other layers, it's great.
How hard was it to design the bird?
The bird and the spider are quite similar. They're a circle with legs or a circle with wings half the time. I mean, of course, there's a bit more to it than that, but I wanted the characters at the core of these to be quite simple to allow the art in the spider book, Andy Webb, and the architecture in this book to kind of be the focus. So they're quite one-dimensional little figures, little characters.
Well, I'm assuming it allows them to be avatars for the kids that are reading them as well. They can sort of put themselves in their shoes or their wings or their legs, as they were.
Yes.
And it's interesting because you only have one child.
Yes, a good one.
She is a gem. I was lucky enough to meet her and get to know her, and she is just the most wonderful. And, you know, it has something to do with the parents, I'm sure.
Do you think?
Yeah. And the sheer fact that you're writing these amazing books for kids, and there's not a little kid running around biting your ankles.
No. No, there's not. I
You're
wouldn't
lucky.
Mind. No, I love kids. They're gorgeous. I'm at the stage now, though, where I'd, you know, it'd be nice to sort of give them back to their parents. But no, they're gorgeous. They're gorgeous. You go to school and they just hug your leg and hug you. You know, they're just divine.
Yep.
Absolutely divine.
And some of the things kids come out with.
Really needing people to tell them that they can do anything and be anything. Mm. And this is for them, and really sort of cherish that potential in them.
Yep.
You know, like you said before, parents are really busy. I'm not putting it on parents at all. I think they're totally outgunned by the world today.
Yep.
They used to have the jump on their kids. It'd be really hard to have the jump on your kids if you had more than one these days. And so it's a full-time, it's a really 24-hour job to keep a jump on them. But and to be inspiring them and all of that, as well as doing the basic stuff.
So what's this one called?
This book?
Yep.
Robin Boyd Architect.
Right.
You know, I came up with a name because I want a little Boyd's name. I was like, Tweety Boyd, Robin Boyd. Oh, yeah, ha-ha, Robin Boyd, that's funny.
Yeah, that's really funny.
And off I went and did the whole thing, and then I went, oh, God, I better go and see the Boyd Foundation.
and they were happy with it?
They were wonderful. They went. Yep. They were wonderful. I said, look, come. I've done this project and I need you to like it. I need your blessing, I think. And even though it's a little girl bluebird and not a man and all that, you know, I wanted to work with them. And they are putting together a brilliant program for kids at the Boyd Foundation to give them an entree into architecture. And they will be running a children's program and have started already. We did a couple of groups when we launched the book, and there'll be more coming, which is fantastic because, you know, why shouldn't littlies understand these? They can. They're sponges. They can just soak everything up and be interested in all of these different potential professions or disciplines.
And now you've had an artist, you've had an architect. What's the next one?
I'm playing with fashion designers and interior designers and all that stuff. But God, the pile of books behind me is mounting up. I've got a couple of other things in the tube at the moment, so I'll be working on those first.
Right. Mm. And website, what is it?
Melbournestyle.com.au.
And go and check it out because even the scarf that you've got on now, which is a building of...
Oh, yeah, this is a Melbourne building.
Is it a tram? No.
No, it's a building.
There's a flying tram on there.
There is a tram.
It's lots of buildings of Melbourne.
Lots of buildings.
And you designed this scarf and you produced it as well.
Yes.
It's stunning, people. So go on to melbournestyle.com.au and check out the wonderful things that this woman is producing. And it's all about Melbourne.
You betcha.
That's the wonderful thing. Marie, thank you so much for coming in.
Oh, thank you, David. You are just the best. Thank you, Brendan.
You're very welcome.
Thank you, Neil. You're wonderful. I got it.
You're on Joy 94.9. This is Sunday Arts Magazine.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.